cops, criminals, guns, drugs, blood, sex, murder, Hong Kongians, and a lot of terrible Boston accents. What do you think we're talking about?
Are we talking about John Woo's classic, Face Off?
Actually, no, we're talking about other classic films. Infernal Affairs,
Which
and
is
The Departed.
Heavily inspired by a John Woo classic.
That is, yeah, but we'll get into that in a bit. Okay, so Pocket Car, this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals, an original podcast about unoriginality. Pocket Car!
How you doing? I don't know.
How are you, Rolando?
I'm good. How are ya?
How are ya?
How?
We have this Google thing up that tells us how to phonetically speak in a Boston accent.
So we got car out. Equals car.
Yeah.
I always add like an Italian thing to Mike.
So yeah. It's just, you do the hand gesture too. You I also can't do see it, him, but he's doing the hand gestures.
Don't
park your car.
If you guys, if we have any listeners from Boston, please tell me what a bubla is. Bubla?
Yeah.
Bubla.
I don't know what that
bubbler.
Is.
Yeah. A bubbler?
What's a bubbler?
I don't like something that throws bubbles. And why are we doing our terrible Boston accents, Nicole?
Because we just saw a movie with a bunch of them in it.
Burn.
But yeah, so we're doing two movies today that, so they're a bit older than the films we usually cover, but they came out within such a short span of one another and they're so similar. So we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about both films interchangeably. We're just going to talk about the plot and the story and the characters, and we're going to compare and contrast throughout the whole thing. So yeah, so before we get into it, as always, we are joined by our lovely producers, Josh and Eddie Z.
What's up, guys?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
So this is our episode on Infernal Affairs / The Departed.
The Departed. That was a good one.
That was a good one.
That was
yeah.
a good one, yeah.
The Departed. Okay, so cue music. So quick history, Infernal Affairs 2002, it came out. It had really great timing in terms of Hong Kong cinema. They had, like, their heyday was the 80s and 90s, and then at the late 90s, they kind of had a come down, and they were kind of lost. So in the early 2000s, they had a resurgence, and this was a film like that. It was a huge smash. This film actually has a bunch of sequels, and we'll talk about that in a bit. And then it was the nomination, or they tried to submit it as the Hong Kong best foreign language film into the Oscars, but it was not included. So it was just a massive hit.
I want to add, rightfully so, by the Oscars. They made a lot of mistakes. Not that year. I guess it's a couple of years later we would come to learn.
That's true, so. Yeah. And then 4 years later, Plan B, Brad Pitt's company, got the rights to it. They hired Scorsese, got this all-star cast, and they made the American remake, The Departed. I can't say it without saying it in a Boston accent.
Well, the departed.
Yeah.
Departed.
So it was so recently, and there's not that much like historical value to it other than perspective that we're going to share. If I forgot anything, I'll bring it up throughout the podcast. But so, Rolando, did you see this before, like watching it for the podcast? Have you seen any films prior to us recording?
Right. No. So I never saw The Departed. Definitely never saw Infernal Affairs. Never knew existed. Love the name. Mm-hmm. What a great pun.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So actually, we should talk about the name then.
Sure.
Put the name in perspective. Essentially, Infernal Affairs is a reference to the lowest level of hell in Buddhist culture, which is Avicii. And so it's a play on internal and then inferno for Americans, because it wasn't the name of that for the Hong Kong title. I think the Hong Kong title was The Unceasing Path.
Yeah. But do you understand the pun?
So the pun in when it's in English, is infernal internal.
No, oh, the internal, the IA, internal affairs, are the people who handle police investigations within the police investigations.
Yes.
So, like, within the police department. So, he ends up working for internal affairs. He's the IA. That's why infernal affairs is, like, what a... Infernal, or is it infernal?
It's infernal.
Infernal,
like,
with an N.
Like hell.
Yeah,
infernal.
Okay, yeah. The pun there is because it should be internal affairs, and it's infernal.
That's what
it's
I
good.
Said, infernal, internal.
The point is, it is a great title, and I love it. The movie itself works because of the title, I feel like, for me. Yeah. My favorite title, but I guess to get back to the other question, though, I had never seen Infernal Affairs ever before. Uh-huh. I didn't know The Departed was based off of this Hong Kong movie.
Yes.
And I never saw The Departed either when it came out, despite pressures from friends, you know, who swore it was like one of the greatest movies ever.
Yeah.
I just was never big into mobster movies. So movies like The Godfather, Goodfellas, Casino.
All Scorsese, practically most all Scorsese films, except for the Coppola.
I tried to think of, was there anything? What other mob movies? Gangs of New York? Again, that's another more.
That's Scorsese. A Scorsese, yeah. What's a non-Scorsese mob film other than The Godfather?
Scarface.
Yes, that's Scarface. De Palma.
Yeah, never. None of those movies ever really drew me in.
I feel you. I mean, I like Westerns better, but, you know, like the Western, I like it when it's really well done. So a lot of those films that you're saying, The Godfather, I think it's a very good film. I don't think it's the greatest movie ever made. People need to calm down on that shit.
What about The Godfather 2?
The Godfather 2 is good, too.
Yeah, I see The Godfather 2 I enjoyed, but it's not a movie I ever want to watch again.
Yeah.
I know friends who will be okay watching it, like the entire three movies in one sitting, and I'm just like, pass.
Yeah, like, no, that's not enjoyable for me. Yeah. I'd rather watch like all of Judy Garland movies before I do that. And I mean, this is personal taste, of course. So Goodfellas, I think it's a great movie. It's my sister's favorite movie of all time. But, you know, I'm not like crazy about it like our culture is. And our culture does have a fascination
with gangster movies. Yeah, The Sopranos, for example. That's another.
The Sopranos
is another example.
Didn't care for it.
I would watch it at the peer pressuring of friends. Like, we lived in a frat house and like that would be playing. So I'd be forced to watch it, but never cared for it.
Well, it's interesting because since this film started off as a Hong Kong film, it started off as a Hong Kong triad, which is their form of the mafia film. And when you translate it to American mafia, it feels so different, actually.
Yes.
Like the triad compared to the Boston mafia is like two completely different feelings. So in an interesting way, the original Hong Kong film doesn't play to me like a mafia film. It plays more like an action cop film.
I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I think it reminds me of Face Off in terms of like the action-y. It was like a action movie, despite the fact it didn't have much action. If you really think about it,
the pacing and overall, and the feeling of the film. Well, I told you this on another occasion, but the filmmakers were very inspired by John Woo's Face Off for this film, double identities and like taking the mask of someone else.
And
you know,
Face Off is,
yeah,
I think the pinnacle of John Woo movies, in my opinion.
I
don't actually know any others. That's how high up it ranks.
So Tony Leung, who plays Chen Wen Yang, was in earlier some of the most successful John Woo films. I got him the American contract to make American films, but I digress. So yeah, so they take very metaphorically this idea of, you know, masks, wearing a mask and mistaken identities. And essentially the plot of both of these films is that there's an undercover cop working in the triad in the mafia to try and give information to the cops. But the mafia has someone pretty much as a spy for them as a cop.
Yeah, yeah. He's like their own in-man. I don't think that's what they're called. I don't know the mob lingo, guys. I don't know them either.
Yeah, we just watched these films, but we care about.
They kept being referred to as rats or...
Yeah, they just they got a mole.
Yeah. In Infernal
Departed,
Affairs.
Yeah.
No, rats were the Departed.
Oh, moles Infernal were in the
Affair,
original?
I think Infernal Affair had moles.
Okay.
Some sort of rodent.
Some sort of rodent, yeah.
The reason I know rats were like mythical, rats was like constantly being, everyone was a rat in the pod.
Yeah.
Like, you fucking rat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So pretty much there's someone lying their identity in the mafia, and then someone's lying as their identity in the cop. And they're both like trying to find out who the other one is, because everyone's aware that in both units, there's a mole and there's a rat and there's a liar, and they're trying to sort it out who it is. So that's pretty much the plot. A lot of action ensues.
Right. I think there are a couple of differences between the two movies, because I think Scorsese, and I don't know who wrote The Departed, but they focus really more on the backstory for the characters.
Yeah.
Specifically Billy Costigan, which is played by DiCaprio, and Colin Sullivan, played by Matt Damon.
Yeah.
So they really dive like a good 20 minutes almost into their backstory of like kind of how they went from police academy and started like infiltrating these different worlds. Right. Well, in what's it called, in Damon's character's role, it was like how he kind of found a father figure in Frank Jack Costello. Nicholson's Frank Costello's character. And yeah, as opposed to the Infernal Affairs, where that movie just jumps right into it. Like, yeah, we start off at the police academy, but we right off the bat, we find out that you're going to be Chang Wing Man Yang? Chang Wing.
That's Chang Wing Yang.
All right. Him. Yeah. He's going to be infiltrating the triads, and Lao Kin Ming is going to be infiltrating the police department because we know that he's associated with the triad, the boss, Han Solo? Han Sam.
You said that with so much seriousness.
It's a very similar sound, right?
Yeah.
So we get we get that in the first five minutes, if that. And then next thing you know, it's apparently 10 years later, and these two characters are very deep in this life.
Yeah, it's so interesting how Infernal Affairs almost has, like, we have no time to give you, like, character studies and, like, character development. Like, here's the plot. Here's wrapped up, like, in a beautifully edited package for the first 5 minutes. It's so fast and so detail-oriented that as a person who doesn't speak the language, it was kind of jarring at first. But then, like, you get used to it and you kind of pick up along the way. But yeah, they were just like, we're jumping right into it. This has been their lives for 10 years and a go kind of a thing.
The movie doesn't slow down either.
It doesn't. Yeah, no, it's that fast pace throughout the whole time. Because I mean, there's a lot of information.
It's an hour and a half, hour 40 minutes, I think. Yeah. Right? So
a lot shorter than the American film.
Right, which was like 2.5 hours. Yeah. And that was just, I thought it was like an exercise in patience because.
Yeah, well, in the American film, it's 18 minutes before we see the title, The Departed. Mm-hmm. And we're not even done developing the characters when we see the title.
Right, yeah. We're just getting the basic premise, which is.
So it took Infernal Affairs 5 minutes. It took The Departed 18 minutes. Yeah,
because it's just like a back and forth montage between Matt Damon and DiCaprio, right?
Yeah.
Matt Damon is going up the ranks. DiCaprio is going into jail. You know, that's basically.
And I don't necessarily hate it because I like films that take their time. Sure. You know, if you take your time and you're doing it right and like every beat that you have is for a reason, you know, it doesn't have to be completely necessary. And I think, you know, Scorsese's a master filmmaker. And I think that he really, Rolando's face is like, okay.
No, I got nothing against Scorsese as a filmmaker. I really don't. I don't know.
But like,
is this though? It's master not, filmmaking?
No. If, in terms of DiCaprio collaborations, I much prefer The Wolf of Wall Street, even though I have my problems with that film too. But like, I still think that like he took his time and it wasn't wrong that he took his time, but I do think I also kind of like the Infernal Affair way of like, here's really fast 5 minutes and then bam, let's go.
So I think there should be a happy medium.
There should be.
For example,
there doesn't have to be.
I don't know.
I mean, there isn't one.
I feel like, cause I think the Departed was almost too slow for me.
Really?
It was like, it felt longer than it needed to be. Right. Especially, so mind you, I saw The Departed first and then I saw Infernal Affairs. And then by the time I was done with Infernal Affairs, I was just like, oh, this one was way too fucking fast. I would have been, give me like a good 20 minutes. I think we could have cut out certain scenes from The Departed.
Yeah, and certain characters.
Could save time. Specifically, so you want to save like a good 15 minutes, we can cut out Mark Wahlberg's character. Right there, we save ourselves plenty of time. Sergeant Dingham, who was a dumbass. I hated him so fucking much. Yeah, he was nominated, but shamefully so. And you know why it's even more shameful? Mm. Because fucking Jack Nicholson was not nominated that year.
Yeah.
Who I get, unless he was running in the best actor category.
No, I don't think he was.
He would be supporting.
I think DiCaprio was up for it, but he didn't win.
DiCaprio was nominated for Best Actor for Blood Diamond.
Oh, and not then for nobody else in Departed was nominated?
No, Matt Damon was just... Why would Matt Damon? He was Matt Damon with a Boston accent. Which is not to say that I don't like Matt Damon. I like Matt Damon.
Yeah, we just don't what do you know, want to know about Damon?
Is he from Boston? I know Ben Affleck is from Boston.
Yeah, from Boston.
Yeah, that's why Good Will Hunting. They were like two Boston guys.
Were they?
We parked a car and we're here at the Oscars. Thank you for finding that charming. But yeah, so I agree, actually. I think the person who quickly and easily outshone everybody.
It's in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, that's basically Boston. Cambridge is.
It's right outside of Boston. He easily outshined everyone with Jack Nicholson. I mean, Jack is like that guy who, even though he's like living up to what like expectations of Jack Nicholson at this point, just like all the other 70s actors are, he's the one that does it the best. Like, I'd rather see Jack Nicholson be Jack Nicholson other than like Al Pacino be Al Pacino.
Yeah. Playing devil's advocate here, though, I do think he should have been nominated, but I'm also going to play devil's advocate here. Was Jack Nicholson just being Jack Nicholson?
Yes, he was.
With an accent?
I mean, totally. He's a star. Yeah. He's a star. So people just want to see him, you know, like people just want to see Tom Cruise. And I like Jack Nicholson's spiel.
Yeah.
I got this rat, this annoying, heat-eating fucking rat.
One of the flaws that this movie had, though, was casting Jack Nicholson. I stand by this because Jack Nicholson so much outshined the leads that I feel like it became the Jack Nicholson show. In fact, spoiler alert, when Jack Nicholson died, I really lost interest in the movie.
Like, what's the point of this movie
like,
now?
Yeah, it's just like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about Matt Damon. I barely care about Leonardo DiCaprio here, you know?
Yeah, it was like, the film lost its charm almost because Jack Nicholson was dead.
Right, because now I got to focus on Matt Damon, who I don't really give a fuck about.
Yeah, which, sucks because the Han Sam character, the leader of the triad, he was very like loud and he was rambunctious in his own way. And he was the personality, but he could not hold the candle. And you know what? As people who speak the language, you know, maybe we're saying that because of how we feel.
Yeah.
But like I've seen films where people where I don't even understand the language and the actor like totally like when we did The Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Toshiro Mifune outshone everyone who played that character in the later renditions. So that's not necessarily true.
Yeah. I think also one of the problems with Han Sam was both that I can't tell. Well, again, I was watching this movie with subtitles at least.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know necessarily if his delivery was threatening enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel threatened. Right. And of course, there's some translation issues there with me and, you know, I'm reading subtitles. But even the way he just carried himself didn't feel like the same gravitas as Jack Nicholson's character.
Yeah, he seemed like a different kind of boss. Like mm-hmm. you actually kind of could feel like you could overtake him or like.
Right.
He wasn't as powerful.
Short little stocky guy.
Yeah.
Like Jack Nicholson is old, sure, but like he looks like he'll still put up a fight.
Yeah, well, also his character was so off the chain, so loose, like you thought he could literally stab you, like shoot you in the head.
Right,
at
that's
any
right.
Point.
There's like a scene. I think the first time he really interacts. All right, so the first time he interacts with DiCaprio's character, right? He mm-hmm. he has that cast and he just breaks it.
Yep.
Right. That was like your first interaction with Costello.
Yep.
That scene happens a little differently in Infernal Affairs. It happens, but it's for different reasons.
Yeah.
And because of that, like, this is really your first interactions with Costello outside of Matt Damon, right?
Yeah.
And so now you get a sense of like, well, this guy really doesn't give a fuck about anything or anyone.
Yeah.
And it's threatening. And then when Leonardo DiCaprio goes to visit him at the house, right? He's just carrying a hand in a Ziploc bag. Like, I was just like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, and just takes out the hand.
Guy?
Yeah, it's so
and,
absurd.
Yeah, and Han Sam just never had any of those, like, any of those moments, you know?
Like. Yeah, definitely. They definitely added all these character eccentricities to really make him
the
fearful.
The only eccentricities that I noticed with Han Sam was when, after he got arrested with like his whole gang mm-hmm. and he's in the police station, he's eating, right? And he's criticizing the food. That's like the most like eccentric quality I found out about him. Otherwise, he was just like a kind of a stock, basic.
Yeah, I would say he was racist, but they were all fucking racist, so.
Well, I don't know. Oh, that yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
But
speaking of racists, do you think the director's depiction of the Thais is racist?
No.
You don't think that was coded language in their own language over there?
How many times did they say the N-word in The Departed?
Not
that
the word.
Been...
Not the word Thai. I meant like the actual depiction of the Thai guy with like those teeth and like the hair.
Yeah,
and then,
that's
like,
hard
that,
for me to
the
say.
The gaudy outfits.
I don't really. Yeah.
Like they really differentiate the fact that he's an other and not
it was
Chinese.
Yeah, I didn't really pick up on that as much as you did. And it's really hard for me to gauge whether or not it's like openly mocking or just like the characters mocking. Like, is it the filmmaker who thinks this way
mm-hmm.
or is it the character?
Man,
you know,
I don't
understand. Yeah, I don't speak the language and all this stuff. So I think that really I can't really hone in on that personally.
I hone in on it. I can always sense. I always sense. Other
you have that
racism.
Sixth sense.
Yeah.
Look at you.
It's like, I know when you're being racist.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't think that. But, you know, in terms of complete dick characters that I wanted to smack, it was Colin Sullivan. You know, his Hong Kong equivalent in Lao, he was such a good looking man. Mm-hmm. And he was so like cool and composed. And like, I believed his relationship with his girlfriend and all this other stuff, like way better of a character. And that's why he went on to have sequels. And he will actually, spoiler alert, his character lives. Collins doesn't live because Colin Sullivan is such a dipshit. That when they adapted it, they're like, we can't let this scumbag live.
Yeah.
And they also added a lot to the Colin Sullivan character for us to almost unfairly hate him. especially like the way he talks to his girlfriend, the way he treats his girlfriend, and the way he treats women in particular. And mm-hmm. then he's just a fucking asshole, and the people, like the choices that he makes for mm-hmm. being a mole or a fucking rat. They just make him into one hell of an abhorrent character that I'm like, ooh, is this an accurate portrayal of toxic masculinity? Or are they like really trying to get me to hate this guy?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Like, is Martin Scorsese doing this intentionally, or is this just,
yeah, because
it's just bad writing?
We all know that Scorsese has a bit of a boner for like men with power, you know, and like mass, like pure masculinity and its quote unquote finest. Mm-hmm. So is this another one of those cases where are they towing the line where they're aware of like this man's bad behaviors, or are they like kind of enamored by it? You know, and I couldn't really tell because there's this like really subtle shit. Like we see a shot, a close up of a woman's ass. He goes, hey, Darlene. And then like she turns around, she rolls his eyes at him, you know, a scene like that. And I'm like, OK, not necessary. But they're telling me that this guy is a womanizer and he has no respect for women.
Mm-hmm. He's a pig.
So character development. He's a pig.
And a cop.
And then but he calls everybody fags and, you know, cocksuckers and whatnot. So
everybody
did that. And then, so it's like, well, everyone, he's not an exception. Everyone talks that way. So it's like weird because it's like, are they getting so caught up in this super machismo, you know, this is a Spanish word, but like still like this over masculine like lifestyle. I don't know. It was weird.
It could be. I mean, you know, aren't Bostonians just, not that I'm saying that Boston.
Oh, we gotta be careful.
I'm not saying that Bostonians are just dropping the word faggot around like no tomorrow.
This firefighter is a fucking faggot.
What I'm just saying is like, aren't, this is like the idea of what Bostonians are, right? So I don't know. I guess I could. He was an abhorrent person, but he was also in a very abhorrent like culture.
Well, it's interesting because it makes me think that the better character is Chan because you don't hate him. You sympathize with him more. Mm-hmm. You don't think, what a fucking scumbag to be doing what he's doing, and then like easily side with his counterpart. You actually kind of understand both of the men and the choices that they make. And when you don't turn him into a complete scumbag, like because they also overly sympathize Billy.
Yes.
The Leonardo DiCaprio character. They didn't do that in Infernal Affairs. And because of that, well, the ending we'll talk about in a bit, but they presented a more realistic take, and I liked the characters more, especially the one who I'm supposed to actually hate, which I think was more successful on their part.
Although I kind of disagree with you with Chan Wen-Yang. They mm-hmm. they did kind of try to sympathize him a little, like even throwing in that ridiculous storyline of like he may have a daughter that he doesn't know about.
Yeah.
For example, because he's been in this life for so long, as opposed to Leonardo DiCaprio, where they try to make him a really sympathetic character. They try to do that with Chan, though, with the other character.
Oh, yeah, I see. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think that that's actually better because it's like we're going to present someone who, in like the morality of it all, is really fucked. And here's some sympathetic things about him, where in the morality of all, Colin's a bad guy and they're not showing you anything sympathetic about him.
Right. You're right. There's no redeemable quality in Colin Sullivan's character, for mm-hmm. sure. Even Lao Kin Ming's character, the way they treated their bosses was even differently, right?
Yeah.
Where I think with Lao Kin Ming's character, you had more respect, even mm-hmm. though at the very end, he betrays him at the end, right?
Yeah.
It's still, well, I don't know. Maybe that did feel out of character more so than Colin's character, right? Because Colin was always just a shithead, right? Like, the reason that Frank Costello didn't necessarily trust Collins completely
mm-hmm.
is proof is in the pudding right there. Like, he kills him, right? I think even Leonardo DiCaprio's character says it at the end, right? At the rooftop meetup
mm-hmm.
when, you know, he has these tapes, he tells him, it's just like, how's that feel? He trusted me more than he ever trusted you.
Go ahead, shoot a cop, Einstein. Watch what happens.
Well, what happened is this bull would go right through your fucking head.
Watch what happens.
But I will say this. The American version really focused on like a lot of daddy issues, I feel like.
Yeah.
I didn't get any of that really from the Infernal Affairs.
No, I think Infernal Affairs is more about morality and getting caught up in like the lifestyle and what it does to your consciousness and to your mind and to your emotions and to your mental health. Yeah. And The Departed was way more focused on relationships between men.
Yeah. And actually, in Infernal Affairs, it works with both characters because I think even the guy who was a triad and then he is a cop now, right?
Mm-hmm.
He weirdly still identifies with being a cop too.
Yeah.
Right? That's why I think at the very end, like, you know, when he's coming out of the elevator after he just killed the guy who saved his life. Again, spoiler alert, guys. The first thing you actually see is like the badge.
Yeah.
Like it's him as the cop, not him.
Well, he also did that criminal.
I know that he did that. But like it's also
it's his identity almost.
He is he's both.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to have the cake and eat it too, I guess, right?
No, for sure.
Whereas Costello was just like he was trying to be a cop at the end. Like he was trying to like identify more as a cop.
Yeah.
But not because of it didn't seem like it was anything to do with morality. It had to do more with the fact of saving his ass.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the ending. because we're talking about him coming out with the badge. Then mm-hmm. it goes right to the funeral. You know, he decides to honor the guy that he killed.
Yeah.
And then it ends. And Chan Wing Yang does not get justice. I mean,
he gets sequels.
He gets away with it. He gets a promotion. He's going to be fine. He gets to be in more movies about it. You know, and Lau King Ming, he died and that's it. In The Departed, everyone gets their just desserts. Mm. Billy gets killed.
Billy gets killed.
The other guy that...
Wait, are you saying that Billy got his just desserts?
Well, all right. Maybe that's a bad way of saying it. Pretty much everybody died. I think they make fun of The Departed for pretty much being like where at the end, it's just like the body count is insane. DiCaprio dies, his friend dies, and then the other guy comes, and then Matt Damon kills him.
Yeah.
And then Matt Damon almost gets away with it until he comes home, and then Mark Wahlberg kills him.
And then I was just waiting for someone to kill Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, right?
I really was. I was just...
And then the building blew up, and everyone in the building died.
I watched the very, very end of the movie to like go all the way to the end credits to see like maybe there's like a tag at the end that like someone kills Mark Wahlberg.
Oh my God, that's such a 2018 mindset, too.
I really didn't care for his character. I was waiting for Alec Baldwin to kill Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, oh, that would have been nice. yeah, no, I mean, it's also kind of unclear as to why Mark Wahlberg kills him.
Yeah, I have no idea why Mark Wahlberg's character kills Leonardo DiCaprio. I Googled it, and like it looks like there was like a lot of people are also confused, so I'm not in bad company.
Josh, he never liked him anyway, though, in the movie.
He never liked him, but...
I think he always suspected something, too.
Yeah. But was he doing it? But was he doing it out of revenge? Or was he doing it because... I keep forgetting. He didn't work for the FBI. But the FBI needed him to... The FBI was using Costello as an informant themselves as well.
Yeah.
So did he mess up some... Or was a big investigation because of his, you know... Matt Damon trying to protect himself. I don't know. It was just kind of weird.
It was a little weird, but...
It was, you know, was it just purely revenge or was it purely... Or was it some other reason? And, you know, I guess the ambiguity is supposed to be smart, but I don't know. It felt silly in this sense.
Well, yeah, it did. Especially because the film then ends on this, what's supposed to be a quote-unquote metaphorical shot.
A metaphorical,
where
please.
Colin Sullivan's dead on the floor bleeding. It's and then the camera pans
you.
Up. And let me speak! And then it shows the building, I guess the City Hall building.
The municipal building.
The municipal building that Matt Damon throughout the entire film has seen and he's just like been enamored by. And then a rat goes across. And then goes to black. And it's like, really?
That was like the most heavy-handed symbolism.
Yeah.
I was so
not
shocked.
Not one of Scorsese's best endings. You know, definitely not. But it was a bit like, oh my God, okay, fine. Like, I think it's less realistic that Colin Sullivan would have been murdered. I think he would have gone away with it. That's why I actually prefer the Infernal Affairs ending, because when it ended, I was like, ooh, that sucks. That stays with me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at the end of The Departed, I'm like, oh, I'm glad Colin died because I fucking hate this like scumbag. And then I just was like, oh, you know, heavy like symbolism. Like, I don't really care.
Yeah. Colin, like, it's funny because Colin's death is like usually regarded as one of the most satisfying death scenes.
Yeah. And I think the movie would have been so successful if it just would have been him going out and sipping a cup of coffee, looking at that City Hall, the municipal building. Would have been a way better ending because everyone would have been like, I fucking hate you. And they would have walked out of that theater angry and with so many emotions. And why did he get away with it? But they didn't do that.
Yeah. You know what else was weird in that very ending? When Matt Damon is coming out of the elevator right before he's about to see his death, like there's these two old ladies who give him like the dirtiest looks. And then like he even notices they're giving him dirty looks. And why?
Yeah.
What is the reason for the dirty looks?
I project myself into those women every
time
I see
you're right.
Them. Like,
the old lady is us.
Yeah. like pretty much. Yeah.
We
like,
hate you,
fucking
Matt Damon.
Hate you. Yeah. Go die. But, you know, speaking of women, Bechdel test. Does this film or the Infernal Affairs pass? Not by a long shot.
No, and
not at all.
Infernal Affairs at least had more than one woman, like one woman in the major role.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas Scorsese did the weird thing of kind of condensing two women's roles from Infernal Affairs into one woman.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that, do you consider that smart or just weird? Or bad?
I thought it was kind of shitty because it was like, we don't have time to explore, you know, the women in their lives. So like, let's just condense her into one because why not? It will be easier. And then one woman, just one woman for them all, you know?
So yeah, I do agree with you that maybe condensing them into one character was kind of weird. I thought it was weird, but I do think that the use of her the character was a little better used than the female characters in Infernal Affairs.
You think so?
I think so. Because in Infernal Affairs, like, you have like the girlfriend who, I think she's a novelist is what her storyline is, right? And the next girl is the psychiatrist.
Okay.
And then the third girl who I'm going to throw in there as like another important female character is the ex who may or may not have his child. Because I think two of those women were at least at the funeral of the main character who died. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but they were all these three characters were like kind of separate. They weren't even really involved in these main characters' lives.
Yeah.
Really. Outside of the fact that they were just like dating them or had romantic feelings towards them. At least in The Departed, they used a female character to explore the men in a way. Does that make sense? Like, it was like one woman, sure. But I think I liked her relationship. You saw how shitty she was being treated by Matt Damon's character, Colin, right? Then you kind of juxtapose that with like the sentimentality that is Costigan, Billy, you know? And I don't know. I thought, like, what's it called? I thought it worked.
But that's, again, though, like an unfailed portrayal of one over the other. You know, it's like, oh, what if those roles were reversed? How interesting would that would have been? What if Colin was a sweetheart to the Vera Farmiga character? And what if Billy was the asshole who didn't want to put her childhood pictures out? Like, what if, like, what? You had added depth to these?
You mean,
wait, there was that one scene where she brought, and he's like, all right, we're not having this out. Like,
I remember that.
And then later on, you know, Billy makes a comment about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like the way they both react to this picture of her, which is who she really is, right? So what if, I'm just plainly saying, like, Colin Sullivan's still an asshole. He's still an asshole. He's still, you know, the mole, and everybody hates him, and he talks down to women. But what if secretly with the Vera Farmiga, he's a sweetheart?
Mm-hmm.
And what if Billy, who's really sentimental and he misses his mother and he's actually trying to do the right thing and, you know, taking Xanax because his lifestyle is too much. And he has a girlfriend that he mistreats. Think about the complexities there.
Yeah, everything wouldn't have been so easy. Like, what if Billy had just been a dickhead? Like, it was the very first time that Billy and I forgot her character's name. Vera? Vera was? No, that's the actress.
The actress's name.
Okay. So when they first interacted, he was very hostile towards her. So you're saying if they had kept he had kept that attitude?
Yeah.
Would you have still made her a love interest or just a psychiatrist?
I would not have made her as a love interest because women don't always have to be a fucking love interest and don't always have to be a love triangle. I remember watching some movie back in the day with like two of my guy friends, and it was just like, oh, a girl always ruins a day. And it's like, sucks because that's the way they're portrayed. Like, they always come in between people and make them, you know, like acts like men in particular and make them like be the source of conflict in these ridiculous ways. And that's the only place for them.
I guess usually when women cheat in film, they're portrayed as a bad guy. I don't think here you're getting the sense that she is in the wrong for kind of cheating.
No, and in
on
a
him.
Way, she gets her own justice and she gets like redeemed and she doesn't have to be with Colin and all this stuff. And, you know, that's the only time where I'm like, okay, that's great that Colin, like, doesn't get the girl. Like, good for her. I don't want her to have to live her life with him. But I still think that it sucks. The only woman, this is her role. And it's just, like, back and forth. And then there was that sex scene that was a little too hot. Like, their bodies were lit in a way that they, like, looked really sexy and all this shit. I was just like, this is kind of creepy.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, you know how I don't like Martin Scorsese films?
Yeah.
I also don't care for Leonardo DiCaprio films. And never once have I found Leonardo DiCaprio attractive. We're talking Titanic, Man of the High Castle, Man of the Iron Mask.
Beach, The Aviator.
Yeah. What's it called? Even to all the way now, I never once found Leonardo DiCaprio attractive.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time I ever found him sexually attractive, especially probably in that sex scene. just they're taking off their clothes and stuff, and it's just like, oh, he looks good.
Yeah,
he looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw Vera, I was like, hot damn. But I was like, why in the middle of this am I watching the sex scene and being like, hot damn to these people? You know, like it was unnecessary. And also, if you're gonna do a sex scene for one, why where was my sex scene for the other couple? You know, like you're not giving me an accurate portrayal.
He couldn't keep it up.
Yeah, I know, but still, I would have loved to have seen that. Maybe that's ridiculous, but
there was also
They showed him in bed,
but never had. Like,
That was
either.
The one moment that was like a real moment between them, where he's standing up and he's like talking about like his fears and his thoughts about his life and all this stuff. So I don't know, whatever.
There was there's also she also alludes to the fact that she might be pregnant. Well, she didn't. She basically announces it to Matt Damon's character. Do you think it was? It's implied that it's Billy's kid, right?
Yeah, I think it is very much.
Especially
implied.
At the end when like she's leaving the funeral, he's like, "What about the baby?"
Yeah,
is that Bostonian?
With that.
Are we talking about the Departed?
Looking straight at the camera.
Walks away.
Okay, so you know these films are both really tightly paced films. You know they're fast, beautifully edited. Really, a lot of great camera work going on. But they're also incredibly different in tone and approach. And I always like to use this scene, and you could probably even find it on YouTube. Oh my God, let me finish the thought before you interrupt me. you could see it on YouTube even. And compare and contrast is the death of Superintendent Wong and the death of Captain Queenan. And in the Hong Kong version, it's a very melodramatic, played out scene where the body, you know, spoiler guys, sorry, but both of their bodies get thrown from a very tall building and they die. And when Lau comes across it, you know, he's sad and there's this really orchestral, like sweeping music that plays and it's done in slow motion and then it flashes back to their relationship and then like time carries on and it's just intercutting, staying in the sentimental mindset. Whereas in The Departed, Captain Queenan dies, Billy has like 2 seconds to process it and then the movie continues. And it's much more gritty in that sense, which is weird because I think that The Departed is a little bit more unrealistic, but that moment is a little bit more real and it doesn't get caught up in the melodrama of it. So everybody but America is really good at melodrama. So you see moments like that being done in other films, particularly foreign films more. And it's interesting because that was the one thing that I was like, as an American, maybe I'm too like, maybe I'm too detached and maybe I'm too cynical. But I didn't really care for the over... I love melodrama. Don't get me wrong. I fucking love melodrama. But like, I thought for that scene, it was just so differences in approaches in terms of like the American perspective and the Hong Kong perspective. Sometimes they won. And it's just interesting to see the different approaches, I guess. What do you think? Did you notice any of that?
I mean, I noticed when Superintendent Wong died, they did the flashbacks, right? Like,
yeah.
They started, you go to black and white, like all the moments that were like the two of them together laughing that had just happened in the movie, right? They had no other memories in the last 10 years. Just these three vivid memories that just happened while the movie took place. It was kind of hokey. I didn't particularly care for it.
And tropey.
Yeah, I think it was, as a filmmaker, and I think, you know, when I was like TAing for schools and stuff, like when kids would try to write flashbacks, it's a use of exposition to really tell the audiences something, right? It's like beating it over the head instead of doing it in an organic manner. And therefore, I never like flashbacks.
Yeah.
However, I know Bollywood movies like flashbacks and these kind of types of moments like this, like cuts like this, where it's like these flash cuts, flashbacks and stuff. So it could be like a foreign thing that I'm just not used to. It's not my style. I actually preferred the way Martin Sheen's character died.
Yeah.
Where he died, he fell. I don't know. I feel like Billy had enough time to process it that was appropriate for the movie.
Where the fuck were you?
What the fuck happened?
You're fucking late. Get in the van.
What do you mean something came off the roof?
The fuck's going on? I came to meet you.
What the fuck? Get in the van. Get in the van.
Did you think it went too fast? Like his reaction?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think it went too fast because compared to the movie's so long that like this like the 30
seconds.
You know what I mean? Like, no. I think the thing is like maybe the time feels shorter in comparison to the movie. And the one for Infernal Affairs feels longer because the movie's so much shorter. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Against perspective of the film.
Yeah.
Because remember, the Infernal Affairs is so fast cut and stuff. I actually didn't think it I didn't notice that there was a difference in terms of time, pacing wise.
Oh.
In fact, the pacing was thrown off for me in Infernal Affairs when they did the flashbacks. I was just like, ugh. I think that was my initial reaction. I was just like, ah.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
I don't think that was the first flashback that happened in the movie, too.
No,
that
it
was
wasn't.
Like,
yeah,
that was like the second one. I think.
Yeah.
Was, the first time it happened, I was just like, ugh.
Which is, I guess, why The Departed spent more time in developing the character so they didn't need to do flashbacks.
Right.
That could be an argument for it then. Mm-hmm. Ooh, interesting.
An argument I didn't even know I made.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to tell you about something. It's called Charles's Law. Now, it's Charles's, right? If it's
Charles.
It's like Charles's Law.
Charles's.
Charles.
Charleston.
Okay, so Charles's Law. I'm bringing it up for the first time because this is the first time that Charles's Law applies. Mm-hmm. And Charles's Law says that a remake will only be better than the original if it is not an adaptation. Okay, so Infernal Affairs was written for film.
Mm-hmm.
The Departed is a remake of Infernal Affairs.
Right.
Therefore, it applies for Charles's Law's theory. Mm-hmm. Murder on the Orient Express, neither of those can really be compared because they're both adapted from a source material, right?
Yes.
So there can be things that they both do better than it. But when it's written for a film or when it's written for television and then it gets remade, the remake, according to Charles's Law, will never be better. The original will always be better.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Charles's Law is correct when you think about Infernal Affairs and The Departed?
So because of Charles's Law, I would have to think that Infernal Affairs is better than The Departed?
Yeah, The Departed is not better.
Mm. I don't think The Departed is better, but I don't think The Departed is worse.
Mm.
I actually think that they are about even. Because I think there's some things that the movie, that the Infernal Affairs did well.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's some things that The Departed did well. One of the scenes that I think the Infernal Affairs did that The Departed didn't do was the introduction of the two characters met before all the action really takes place, right?
Yeah.
They met at a stereo store. I think he was buying a stereo from the undercover cop.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that was nice. You get to see a moment of the two of them where they are both
before shit hits the fan.
Yeah. Like this is a moment where the two of them really aren't thinking about their double lives.
Yeah.
They just wants to sell a stereo because this is his job, his mm-hmm. side job. And then the other one just wants to buy a stereo because he wants to listen to his fucking music.
Yeah.
And it was a very nice moment where you see the two of them kind of like at their most natural base elements and interacting with each other, no less. The Departed did not do anything like that. We only see these two characters living their double lives.
Yeah, that's true.
Throughout the whole thing. And even when they finally first meet one-on-one, it's with the fact that they're living double lives.
Yeah, and they're still like,
yeah.
Like at least Matt Damon has the knowledge of who he is, so mm-hmm. he's putting on an act and all this stuff. So, yeah, you know, I thought that this might be a case for Charles's Law, but you know, I think I'm kind of with you where they're both good films and they both do something unique. And I can't really say one does this better, or one's a better, like tells the story better. So I'm like I'm Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Charles's Law is proven either correct or incorrect.
Right.
And overall, I think they're both really good films. And I think people should walk away from this podcast watching both. So make sure you watch both films.
Oh, actually, I never wanted to say, I've never said that I thought they were good. I just want to be very, very clear on that one. Okay. I said they're equal. Does not mean I think they're good.
You don't think they're good films?
I think they're both kind of mediocre films.
Okay, because I'm not saying by good films. I'm not saying they're excellent. I'm not going to be like, you haven't seen The Departed. Oh my God. You haven't seen Infernal Affairs. But I still think they're pretty good.
The Departed is not that good, I think.
And Infernal Affairs is not that good.
Okay, so I guess I'm comparing The Departed based on, I know I said that I don't like mob movies,
mm-hmm.
and I stand by that. However, that does not mean that I haven't seen them. So I'm comparing this to the other mob movies I've seen. In this case, it happened to be two Scorsese ones, Casino and Goodfellas, all right? Pale in comparison to these two.
Okay, so why don't we throw all of that out the window
and let's talk about the movie objectively?
Yeah, the movie objectively in terms of filmmaking, in terms of storytelling, in terms of acting, what makes a good film in terms of context for both of them. Are we still saying that they're not good films?
Yeah, I would say that they're both not good films. I would say they're both mediocre at best.
I could never make any of these films.
Oh, you're right. I myself as, yeah, I wish I could make a movie like this.
There's intricacies that the more you watch it, you pick up on. Like, that's good filmmaking. Also, a film that stays with you, I think, is also a testament to a good film. Whether or not, even if it's made well, if it stays with you, it impacted you.
Yeah, these movies.
So neither of these stayed with you?
No, I don't think so. I feel like John Woo's Face Off will live longer in my heart than Infernal Affairs. Okay. And Departed.
It's no longer Face Off. It's John Woo's Face Off.
It is John Woo's Face Off. He must always be remembered for giving us the gift of Face Off.
Yeah, it's truly.
But no, also The Departed is just, there's nothing about it outside of the ridiculous accents. There's nothing about this movie that's going to stick with me. And maybe finally thinking Leonardo DiCaprio is sexy. Okay. Those might be the only two things about the takeaways I have in this movie.
Okay. Not even the on the nose ending.
The on the nose ending will also live in my head forever as a remembrance for me as a director to what not to do.
Okay.
To close a movie, don't give away the symbolism.
Yeah, seriously. So, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So no, but
if we presented that in our class in film school, we would have been like, "What were you thinking?" In like, really, I think that was a bit on the nose there.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. All the professors would be like, "No, this is garbage." But because Martin Scorsese did it, he wins a fucking Oscar.
He should have shown it to some of his like fucking mentors and been like, "You need to throw it out. Just throw it out. Just throw it out." The amount of times our teachers told us, "Just throw it out." All right, so I guess now it's time to move on to a lightning round.
Yeah, let's do the lightning round.
Lightning round.
So, who do we like better, Chen Wen Yang or Billy Costigan?
I think I like Billy Costigan better. Like I said, the first time it ignited some sexual feelings into Leonardo DiCaprio.
It's tough, but I guess I do like Chen a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Even though he had no real character development, though.
Yeah, but I don't. It's kind of like I was forced to unfairly like Billy over Colin.
I agree with you 100%. Yes,
so because of that, I don't like.
They really did everything they could to make me like Billy Costigan.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I still think, you know, just because it ignited something that I never felt for Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
It deserves it.
So Lau King Ming or Colin Sullivan?
I'm gonna go with Lau King Ming.
I'm going to go with him, yeah, too. He was way more handsome, more realistic, and...
I think, like, yeah, he was way more realistic than Billy Costigan's character. Plus, you know...
Colin Sullivan.
Whatever. Colin, yeah. Not whatever. All these Irish names. Colin Sullivan.
Yeah, no, Colin was unfairly a douchebag. So.
Yeah, and they really went out of their way to make him a douchebag. So.
For sure. So, Superintendent Wong or Captain Queenan?
I'm going to go with Captain Queenan.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with him, too.
He was such a sweetheart, right?
He
really... I think one of my favorite scenes in the Departed was when Billy goes to his house, right? And then, like, Queenan could be a dickhead and, like, kick him out, right? But instead, he's just like, come in, have dinner. Like, really fatherly, almost.
Yeah.
So I thought that was sweet.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Han Sam or Frank Costello?
Oh, Frank Costello, easily.
Yeah, Frank Costello, yeah. Best character.
Frank Costello stole the show. Like I said, I wanted to stop watching the movie once he died.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. If I'd work for any mob boss, I'd work for Frank.
Yeah, agreed.
So, and so who is the more useless character? Sergeant Dingham or Sergeant Dingham?
Sergeant Dingham.
I would agree.
Yeah, for sure.
I think Sergeant Dingham was just, yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, that's Mark Wahlberg.
And
Mark Wahlberg.
Because, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just totally unnecessary character.
Agreed.
Sorry, we're not charmed by him. I feel like the rest of the world loved that character, and we're just like, nope.
But what did they love? All the cursing?
I guess.
Paka Yakara, you fucking fagga. That's basically what it was. Well, you want punch me, you fucking pussy?
All right, on that note, let's get some news.
Eddie Z, what have you got for us?
I'm really excited and optimistic about this. So it's been announced that they're going to create a live action version of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Netflix is teaming up with Nickelodeon and the original creators of the animated series. And they're planning at least 10 to 13 episodes we're thinking about 2020, possibly. Ooh. It happening. So they're definitely talking about making sure there's no, how do you say, whitewashing of characters. It's going to be a very diverse cast. They want to definitely create something new, keeping with the original story.
You know, it's so interesting because technically we already have a live action version of The Last Airbender, but it was so problematic.
It was bad.
That was like 10 years ago, though.
It hasn't been that long.
Yeah, but at the same time, it wasn't that long ago, and yet it was so problematic.
Right, right. And on top of that, like, mind you, the director, M. Night Shyamalan, like, he should know better. Like, you're a person of color, dude. Right? Like, you could, like...
But then again, like, we're assuming that every decision was left up to him. I think Avatar The Last Airbender was such a magnificent show.
I didn't know that you liked.
Oh, yeah. I thought, I mean, the premise of it was so brilliant. You know how, like, you always ask, like, are you Gryffindor? Are you Slytherin? Mm-hmm. I'm always like, what kind of bender are you?
What kind of bender are you?
What kind of bender am I?
Yeah.
Oh, girl, you know what kind of bender I am.
Water? Earth?
Are I'm you fire? Yeah.
Interesting. No, I feel like...
What do you think you... What are you?
I think I fall more towards earth.
You are an earthbender.
I think I'm more of an earthbender.
Yeah. You are.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think Josh is?
He's a firebender.
Firebender?
You think he's a firebender? Mm-hmm. No, I think he's more like air or water. You're Californian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, California is probably more water.
He might be water. I forget. What's his? What does he have more of in his chart?
And Eddie, you are air, right? Waterbender. You're a waterbender too? Okay,
what's your sign? Leo. Oh, honey, you fire.
It's Leo of fire too.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many firebenders in here.
Wow. So yeah, I didn't know. I actually did not know that you were a fan of The Last Airbender.
Yeah, so I have a roommate who's a total fucking nerd. Mm. And so, you know, we talk a lot about stuff like that. And Last Airbender is one of the things I can get on board with.
Last, yeah.
I think it's a great premise.
Right. I agree with you. I think it's a great one. I think what M. Night Shyamalan... So it's so funny, right? When they announced the movie, I was kind of trying to be optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that by this point, M. Night Shyamalan's name has been dragged through the mud by his own doing.
Yeah.
So I was still trying to be cautiously optimistic. And then the movie came out. I heard how terrible it was. I tried to watch a little bit of it on like Netflix, I think. And it was just awful.
Yeah.
So I just stopped. And then in the show notes, we'll put like a link to like these video essays that really break down why these movies are so awful.
Okay.
Compared to the original source material. But no, when I heard this news, I was crazy, so I didn't know this was going to be the news for today. I kind of suspected because I kind of made a big fuss about it on my social media as soon as I found out that they were working on this reboot, I guess, right? The only thing I will say is just like maybe instead of doing Aang's story, they could have done, I would have been happy if they had done Korra, which is the sequel. So I don't know if you've seen that one.
I have not.
Okay, so Korra, I feel like you might enjoy. If you liked The Last Airbender, Korra's story is much more mature. The problems are a little more adult. And I think the exploration of psyche tends to be, as a result, more adult. That's the reason why the show went off the air from Netflix, from Nickelodeon to like go online only, because it started reaching some topics that were a little more
too much
risque, for kids. So interesting. So I recommend that show, but I cannot wait.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm
optimistic for this show. The original creators... Eddie's right. They put out, Netflix and the creators put out the statement saying, like, we plan on not whitewashing. So
good.
They're being proactive about it. They're learning from their mistakes, and I appreciate that.
And I can't wait till we do it on the podcast.
I would, yeah. That would be...
We're going to be on top of it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And it means you guys have to watch the M. Night Shyamalan version.
Yeah.
Oh, we would. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're going to rip that to shreds. Yeah,
we have to.
All right, cool. This was fun.
This was a good one.
Okay, well, that's a wrap. Let's
go.
That's
a rah. Rah?
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Now we're going to go get in our car and go home.
Go home.
Well, that's, I don't know. Now I'm kind of doing Scandinavian in there. But
until next time, stay unoriginal.